How's that? There we go. I almost had it on. As we begin today, before we do our opening prayer, I just would like to say a couple things about this last week, if I may. Because I had an opportunity to really experience, I think, what is the best of Montgomery County. And as we came together in this high water situation, it was pretty amazing as I watched the fire marshal's office, the sheriff's office, the constables, I mean the hospital district, and the commissioners keeping track of each other, OEM, or emergency management, that Montgomery County is a special place. And they came in, they got right after it. What an honor to serve with all of them, to be able to spend time with them. And I have to tell you, on behalf of all of us in Montgomery County, thank you all very much.
Absolutely.
And we took a very difficult situation, and we're continuing to work through it. And I believe that Montgomery County will get her done. It's pretty amazing. And I wanted to acknowledge that and thank all of you who were involved. We even had IT coming over and checking on us. Man, we appreciate it. As the water came in, it was awesome. So we thank you very much. That our hearts go out to those who are in a very difficult situation right now as we went out and surveyed the area and the homes, the brand new homes, and the amount of water between 25 and 29 inches in a 24-hour period, especially over in East County, is unbelievable. And we're awaiting some final results, damages and whatnot, but as you know, that a disaster has been declared, 13 counties have participated, and we're moving forward. So I'm going to ask someone today to be a volunteer for our prayer as we start off and then do our pledges. And then, if you would remember in that, the people who are really hurting right now as a result of Imelda, can I have a volunteer to pray?
Judge, I'd like to add one thing, if you don't
mind. Yes, sir.
Thank you for your comments. Very well said. And this flood reminds me, we lost an amazing community partner the last few days.
Yeah.
Buster Bowers passed away. And if you remember, and I don't know if you do, but during Harvey, they flooded. They got out in their parking lot, and they cooked. And they fed anybody that wanted to stop by and get something to eat. Anybody that was hungry that needed a meal, they supplied it. Mm. And you could put a little bit in the kitty to help the workers that were not working. But if you didn't, it was free. And we're going to miss people like that you can't replace.
That's right.
They've done so much for the community and the county. And keep his family in your prayers. We're going to miss him.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a volunteer who would open our time in prayer today? Yes. If you would please all stand together, and then we'll say our pledges.
Father, we thank you for being with us this last week as we have struggled, and yet we have seen the best of who we are. We want to lift up all the first responders that have been working tirelessly to provide services to survivors of a difficult time. We want to lift up our leaders who have lost sleep this week as they met the needs of the community in which you have placed them in. And I want to lift up the families that have been decimated by floods for the first time in their life, or even the second or third. Father, I pray for their spiritual condition, their emotional condition, and their physical condition. May we have strength. May we come together as a county. May we come together as a people. May we hold one another. May this continue to be a special place, and we thank you for each one that is. Give us strength now as we go forward in your business. Give us a civil discussion. May we do the best that we can for the people of this county under your leadership. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. We say our pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
throne.
Honor the Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to the Texas,
one state, under God,
one and indivisible.
Thank you all. And you may be seated. Let the record reflect, Commissioner Nowak is not with us today. All others are present. And do I have, gentlemen, do I have a motion to approve the Commissioner's Court agenda today?
Move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. So we move on to our item of proclamations and resolutions, the presentation of the National 4-H Week Proclamation.
Thank you for having us today. We have...
Thank you very much.
You guys.
How nice. 4-H. I love 4-H.
We need this.
Wow. Very good. Thank you.
Chips and dip.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We thought we would bring you a few goodies for an appreciation for supporting us. I'm going to turn it over to Kayla Hadash. She is our county council chairman and will be reading the proclamation. And then Justin and I have some highlights of our 4-H year.
All right. Thank you. Whereas the Montgomery County Commissioners Court is proud to honor the 4-H Youth Development Program of the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service for 112 years of providing experience-based education to youngsters throughout the Lone Star State. And whereas this admirable program, which seeks to provide a learning experience for the whole child, including head, heart, hands, and health, helps young Texans to acquire knowledge, develop life skills, and form attitudes to enable them to become self-directed, productive, and contributing members of our society. And whereas it's more than 550,000 urban, suburban, and rural youth participants ranging in age from 8 to 19 hail from diverse ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds and truly represent a cross-section of the state. And whereas throughout its proud history, the 4-H program has developed positive role models for countless Texans and, through its innovative and inspiring programs, continues to build character and to instill the values that have made our state strong and great. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Montgomery County Commissioners Court hereby designated October 6th through 12th, 2019, as National 4-H Week in Texas and commend the 4-H Youth Development Program of the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service and the many men and women who have made the program a success.
All right.
I move.
We need Thank you. We don't need a...
I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
We would like to give you a few highlights of what our program has been this year for 2018-2019. We had 10 clubs that reported 23 community service projects with 158 youth. And 76 adults participating in one or more of those projects. 12 projects reported 182 hours of service. Examples include $225 raised, 80 door hangers, and 100 Christmas cards for Heritage Oaks Assisted Living Center. Warm winter items for Conroe House of Prayer, 80 pounds of food, and two SUVs full of warm winter clothing for the Willis Parent Support Center. And they've already started helping for this year, helping families clean houses out and clean up after Imelda. All of this is all the community service and leadership feeds into their 4-H record books. The main focus of our record books is to teach them record keeping skills and develop a complete record of project activities, leadership, and community service that can be used for college, scholarship, and job applications. Last year, we had 25 books turned in. 21 went to district judging. 86% of those placed in the top three. And two advanced to state with fourth and seventh placings there. Our 4-H record books feed directly into the Texas 4-H Foundation Opportunity Scholarship Program. And this year, Montgomery County members brought home $40,000 in scholarships. Our contests that our kids participate in, that 4-H members, gives them opportunity to exhibit the skills that they've been learning in project meetings and in their practices, And so some examples of the skills they can learn through can be shown through their placings in the contest throughout the state. This year at Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, we had in the archery contest, we had 3 grand champion and 1 reserve champion class winner. Agrobotics that Justin has been heavily leading, we had our 3rd place junior team and 2nd place senior team. At San Antonio, Seth submitted a new contest called Tell Your Story of Texas Agriculture Video Challenge, and he was the first runner-up out of the whole state of Texas.
Wow.
In the shotgun shootout, we had 3 grand champions, 1 reserve champion, a 3rd place and a 4th place exhibitor, and then 5th place food challenge at San Antonio. In major shows, we had contestants that participated in Vet Science Skillathon, poultry judging, public speaking, science fair, wildlife habitat evaluation program, horse judging, livestock judging, wool judging, and swine skillathon, in addition to our traditional base livestock programming. They are getting out and doing additional things. At State 4-H Roundup, we had 26 participants in attendance. We had 2nd place food challenge, 3rd place discover scientific method, which is a science fair contest, and 2nd place educational presentation, and then 3rd and 2nd place teams in wildlife challenge, and Max was a part of those teams. State 4-H Dog Show, 12 exhibitors brought home 21 first place trophies, including best in show photograph and junior high point. State Horse Show, we came home with 8 exhibitors came home with 12 top 10 placings. Our district council, all of our county council officers feed into our district 4-H council, and we had a student run for district council last year, and she was elected as the district council secretary. And Seth was elected in a new process at the state level as a delegate at large for state 4-H council. And in that election process, he is our state 4-H public relations officer. So we would like to see, thank you for all of your support, and we are representing Montgomery County very well.
All right.
And I'll turn it over to Justin.
Good job.
Unbelievable.
I just want to highlight a little bit more. I work on the non-livestock side of the 4-H program, and we had about 8,000 youth that we reached this year through our 4-H curriculum, the biggest being our Junior Master Gardener program with 2,500 kids, and also we've had about 1,000 kids through our Egg to Chick program that we have with the schools. But I really do want to highlight on the robotic side of things, we have the largest robotic 4-H program in the state of Texas, very active. We have about 10 teams, 45 kids who participate in it. And we have done really well over the year. If you think about agriculture, technology is heavily immersed in our everyday life. We cannot produce the food that we eat every day without the technology that we have. But we had, at the East Livestock Show and Rodeo, as Michelle had mentioned, we had 2nd and 3rd place teams. At the Montgomery County Fair, we had the very first agrobotic contest focusing on Texas timber that we are known for here in Montgomery County. We had the 1st place a junior team, the 3rd place junior team, 2nd place intermediate, and the 1st place senior team for the very first time. So we did a great job there. We went on to district, and we had the 1st place senior team, and we swept the intermediates. Intermediates are 6th through 8th grade, and we got 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. So we have a very active youth who are going to be our future scientists and problem solvers. So thank you again for all y'all's support.
Thank you so much.
Such a good job. Congratulations.
Such a good job.
Good job, kids.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
I've had a chance to shoot with a couple of your 4-H'ers.
Yes,
sporting clays.
Yes, sir.
Oh, to be young again.
They got good eyes.
Man, let me tell you. Really, really good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You do us all very proud. That's awesome.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go move on in our agenda to 7B. Consider and approve proclaiming October 6th, the Mental Illness Awareness Week. Dr. LeVar, you're going to come and share with us on this, correct?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ladies.
Each year during the first week of October, NAMI and supporters across the country raise awareness of mental illness Each year, we educate the public, fight stigma, and provide support. And each year, our movement grows stronger. We believe that mental health conditions are important to discuss year-round. And now, since 1990, when Congress officially established the first full week of October as Mental Illness Awareness Week, advocates have worked together to sponsor activities, large and small, to educate the public about mental illness. NAMI Greater Houston, which includes Montgomery, Harris, and Fort Bend County, and the families and friends of those living with mental illnesses, sincerely thank you. We thank you, our county commission, for the services and support you have provided for individuals living with mental illnesses and their families. Although we have substantial room for improvement, we have no doubt that because of your support and your help, we will continue this and do very well. I want to personally thank each of you for the support you have given NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And most of you know I'm vice president of NAMI Greater Houston. I also work as a community relations administrator for WellPath, the Montgomery County Mental Health Treatment Facility. And a new thing that we have done is the Behavioral Health and Suicide Prevention Community Task Force of Montgomery County, and I'm on that governance board, but I wanted to say thank you. So now I'll read the proclamation, and I thank you for members that have come to stand with me. Whereas mental health is a consequential part of overall health, and whereas one in five adults experiences a mental health problem in any given year, and whereas approximately one half of chronic mental illness begins by the age of 14 and three-quarters by the age of 24, and whereas suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States and second leading cause among young adults, and 90% of people who die by suicide have an underlying mental illness, and whereas long delays, sometimes decades, often occur between the time symptoms first appear and when individuals get help, and whereas 1 in 25 adults experience a serious mental illness such as major depression, bipolar disorder, or schizophrenia in a given year that substantially interferes with or limits their major life activities, and whereas approximately 20% of state prisoners and 21% of local jail prisoners have a recent history of a mental health condition, and whereas serious mental illness cost America $192 billion lost earnings per year, and whereas early identification and treatment can make a profound difference in successful management of mental illness and recovery, and whereas every citizen in Montgomery County community can make a difference in helping end the silence and stigma that continues to surround mental illness and discourage people from getting help, and whereas public education and civic activities can encourage mental health and help improve the lives of individuals and families affected by mental illness, and whereas to that end, citizens in Montgomery County have come together to develop the Behavioral Health and Suicide Prevention Community Task Force to create a better awareness through education, prevention, and community connections that will improve the lives of those affected by these disorders. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Commissioners Court of Montgomery County, Texas, to hereby proclaim the week of October 6th through the 12th as Mental Illness Awareness Week in Montgomery County to increase public understanding of the importance of mental health and to promote identification and treatment of mental illnesses. So we thank you so much for that.
Dr. LaVar, thank you very much. Thank you for coming and reading it. Do I have a motion?
I move.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you all very much.
Motion carries. Thank you all very much and for all the work that you do. All right. We will move on to item number 8. Do we have a motion to accept and approve the amendments from September 4th, 2019
move.
Special
second.
Session? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Consider and approve the Commissioner's Court minutes, regular session dated September 10th.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. As we move on to the consent agenda, there is one item that I would like to defer. It's on page 6 of 10, and it's L2. L2, consider and approve acceptance of supplemental awards. We're not ready for that at this point, so I would like to defer that. Are there any other modifications to the consent agenda that we need to consider today?
I move on the consent agenda with that change.
All right. Second. We have a motion. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's move on to our open session. Do we have any citizens? I did not receive anything, but are there any? Okay. Thank you. Let's move forward. The Office of Court Administration.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. As you know, I'm Kathy Hamilton. I'm judge of the 359th District Court. This is my 17th year on the bench, and I have only good memories of working with this court. The Montgomery County Judiciary has always enjoyed a cordial and respectful relationship with Commissioners Court. We are mindful of the separation of powers and the commissioner's inherent power to set the county budget and make expenditures within constitutional and statutory parameters. The judiciary must remain independent from this largely political process. From Canon 1 of the Texas Code of Judicial Conduct, an independent and honorable judiciary is indispensable to justice in our society. A judge should participate in establishing, maintaining, and enforcing high standards of conduct, and should personally observe those standards so that the integrity and independence of the judiciary is also preserved. I'm here today with a number of my colleagues because we have unwillingly been brought into this process by some public statements of a member of this court. We're also here to address the expenditures of what is known as court operations. This generally and most significantly includes costs associated with indigent defense, the appointment of counsel in cases involving abused and neglected children, the cost of providing citizens their constitutional right to a jury trial, and finally, recent escalating cost of providing special prosecutors and special judges. Historically, and I've been here long enough to speak historically, this court established a budget for these expenditures not by consulting with the judges or their administrative staff, not by using experts to project trends in case filings and cost per case, but instead by adopting those actual expenditures of the prior fiscal year for the prospective fiscal year. I'm not here to comment on whether that was a good or a bad method that would invade your province, but I am here to tell you that doing so was partially in recognition of two points. First, the judge's statutory and constitutional duty to order these expenses paid, and secondly, the trust that this court historically placed in the Montgomery County Judiciary to be good stewards of our citizens' resources. The obvious problem, however, was determining the court operations in this way was that each and every year it resulted in expenses that exceeded the budgeted line item. This is because each and every year the population of this county grew and grew. Growth is amazing and wonderful and healthy, but with the population growth, so grew our court dockets, the family, civil, and criminal cases increased exponentially. And no file walks into the courtroom by itself, and so grew the thousands of individuals entitled to representation in court. We know that you expected this overage, and the obligations were paid as they were incurred and audited. We know they were expected because they were always placed on the consent agenda. As recently as 2 months ago, our OCA director, and that's Office of Court Administration's director, warned this commissioner's court that you were approving a budget that would not even cover the contract expenses that this commissioner's court negotiated, approved, and signed. Recently, a member of this court in a public statement has seemed surprised that the expenses have exceeded the amount you budgeted, and this has been blamed on certain judges and court administration staff. This might appear to be all about politics and not about people, but hardworking people are getting hurt in shifting blame and responsibility. We are here in support of this commissioner's court and the work that you do. We're here in support of our fellow judges, and in support of and confident in the work of our dedicated staff. I preside over three specialty courts every week in the evening hours after my regular dockets have ended. I start each court with a quote, and one that I love is, "We are all just walking each other home." In that spirit, Commissioners, we are honored to walk with you in resolving any issues about a budget that is constitutionally required to protect the children of this county as well as the accused. We are here to answer any questions you may have about the court operations budget, and I thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in.
No questions?
Gentlemen, I have a question, if I may.
Yes.
As obviously as we plan and as we look, and I had the opportunity to participate in obviously the first budget. You mentioned, Judge Hamilton, that you based the budget on previous year. But do you think that it is not expedient, given the growth? You know, we know we can look at the DA's office, and he has, as we grow, he does a certain percentage, and we're getting all this data on these various things that are happening. As we plan, is it not expedient, would you think, to do that as well, just being able to project? Because with the combined experience that y'all have up here, I mean, it's, with all due respect, you guys are unbelievable, and we appreciate you and want to work with you. And I think I speak for all of us that are here in the Commissioner's Court. And so what are your thoughts on that?
On how to gauge during the year?
Yeah. Or is
so that
something
when we get
that's kind of off limits that we don't want to project that sort of thing?
No, I think we should definitely start watching as the year goes to the growth rate, to the number of our cases probably increased maybe 30% in felony and certainly that much in misdemeanor offenses. So we have that many more defendants that we are providing representation to as indigent defendants.
Yeah.
So you're thinking that maybe along the way, quarterly or something, we just keep track of how those numbers are increasing?
Well, I think as we come to the time of the budget where we are planning the future, because we're, you know, this last budget we were trying very hard to stay within a certain parameters, that if we just have projections to operate on. For instance, we approved the district court based upon projections and where we were going to go in the future, knowing that this is a need of which I am and continue to be, and when I was in the House of Representatives was very much in support of and continue to be. That's my only comment about that, so that there is a some kind of basis for planning as we're coming up with these numbers. Amanda?
Judge, I did meet with the Board of Judges a couple weeks ago, and I am going to be working closer with them throughout each month, kind of going through where they're at, working with them also to trend about their cases and see. I'm going to work very closely with them. So the Budget Office is taking a bigger role in assisting the Board of Judges with to make sure if there's an issue that we come, you know, as a whole. That way it's not the Commissioner's Court against, you know, the Board of Judges or anything
sure.
like that. To better help, I think, both sides, to kind of help you guys understand what the projections really are and so that they also have, you know, a voice to communicate those needs and desires.
Sure.
Years ago, when we went through budget, we met with each judge, and it took hours. And obviously, us sitting here, we don't know what you do. We don't compare your staff to other staff members. Judge McDonald took that on 6 or 8 years ago, Judge, whatever it was, to make that presentation to the court as one. And that worked out. And I think we need to do something like that this year with this issue.
And it's not our
indigent defense. We don't have a choice. I mean, you guys don't have a choice.
Right.
That's
we don't
exactly
have a choice,
right.
But
that's exactly what I was going to say. It's not our pencils
it's
and pens.
It's a true contingency item. Now, but I think probably if we had somebody from the judicial, and maybe Nate would be fine, whatever, to give us those projections for upcoming years based on population. I mean, I get it. You're right.
Okay.
I mean, everything we do, the population growth affects demand for services. You guys are part of it, the judicial staff. And I think we need that input, and Amanda's there, I think. I think that's what you're saying,
yeah.
Is next year you're going to work with the judges get those projections, and we need to pay attention to them.
Does
and
Nate,
y'all know we don't.
Does
it's Nate not bring us projections or not?
Right. So during budget workshop, he did.
Okay.
And.
But that I think that's a little too late.
But we didn't listen.
Right.
Again, I mean,
we didn't listen.
That's a little too late. Well, what I'm getting at is if we do our midterm budget review in March, that's when we need to really. So we didn't fix this for 2020.
So 2020, they more than likely, if we don't fix it at midyear, there will be an issue. I mean, it is. I would say with 99.5% confidence that I feel like they're going to need more money in 2020. And so we talked to them about, you know, doing a midyear budget update to kind of track and see the cases versus what we have them at, right, what you guys adopted it at versus what the reality is, so that you guys can bring back and expect in midyear that you will have to allocate more expenditures towards indigent defense, contract attorneys,
like that old commercial, pay me now or pay me later.
Where's the major shortfall? Indigent defense or CPS or all of it?
If I may, okay. And I have a PowerPoint that's very brief if you want to see it, but we're here not to criticize the past, but to talk about hopefully the way things will go in the future. For the past 2 years, essentially attempts have been made to point the blame at the judges or our OCA director, who we've lost. He has resigned as a result of what's
Nate resigned?
Nate has resigned.
Oh, geez.
And we have a problem with somebody going outside of their department and interfering with our department people. Okay? That's why we're here. Just 2 months ago, Nate stood here. Neither the OCA nor the Board of Judges has ever proposed the court ops budget to you guys. It was the county auditor for many years, and for the past 2 years, it was the budget office. For the past 4 years, they have consulted with our OCA director, and if you look at our PowerPoint, if you want to see it, you will see that the gaps are much closer. We have much closer projections, but it's still throwing a dart in the dark, no matter what you do, period. But 2 months ago, he stood here and said, y'all are $420,000 short on a contractual obligation. And regardless of that being pointed out, it wasn't the proposed budget from the budget office that didn't include that amount was what was approved, and we were instructed to come back mid-year and essentially beg for more money. And we don't believe we should be put in that position. That's why we're here. We don't want to have to come back. We want to, perhaps, we should take over asking for the court ops budget or our OCA director if we get a new one. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's what's happened and why we're here.
Are your immediate needs addressed right now?
Come mid-year, I anticipate that there will be budget problems.
As Amanda said.
Well, like as Commissioner, but, go ahead, Judge.
Let me say this. We, as a group of judges, both the district and the county, have done what we can do to help keep this down. I know it doesn't seem like it to y'all, but we've done things like the district judges have contracted attorneys and to keep the cost down per case. We have on the jail docket where we, instead of paying each attorney what one would get for a normal fee, they get so much for a group of five. Keep it down. Our cost is somewhere around $230-something for a defendant, which is, or, and don't hold me to the exact number, but it's less because of the things we've done. We created the MAC, the juvenile MAC, which works very well. I was juvenile judge for 3 years, and those, I don't know that it could run any smoother as far as that goes. The CPS MAC, which was dissolved without the consult of the judges that handle CPS. And what I have been told, because I do not handle that, but you now have cases, number of cases going down and costs going up on that thing because the MAC was dissolved. And every time the legislature meets, no respect to our past legislator, you don't know what they're going to do. They came down with the last deal. It's like now this hemp and marijuana thing. Well, you don't think that really affects, but what happens is every marijuana case got to be tested now to see if it's 3% HTC or less. Because if it's less, it's hemp. If it's more, it's marijuana. Well, that in and of itself, you say, well, the state's going to test it. Well, the defendants, they want to test it too. They want their own experts. Same thing in DWIs. We go through that with experts, and because they get blood results, and we have to go through. The defendants are entitled to fair representation and have their own experts. All that's money, and there's no way around it. I wish there was, because we certainly didn't call for this, you know, Fair Defense Act.
If I may,
we have to live with it.
Just really quick, I'm just going to answer the question about are we okay today. We are, but after some fancy footwork by our auditor and our county attorney's office, there was a point where our indigent defense office could not even put in the vouchers and whatnot for payment, and we were going to be breaching contracts in this county. It was going to be a big deal. Rakesh Pandey and his staff had to do manual entry on the very last day before the last day that an agenda item could be brought in, which puts his office in a bad situation because that creates potential error. We just don't want to be in this position. We want to be able to pay the stuff that we know we have a contractual obligation to pay. We're required to. Our auditor is required to make sure it happens, too, by law. And that's really kind of where it all comes down to, that $420,000 that Nate set up here in August and say, guys, we're short $420,000 right now. We can tell you this is just on an indigent defense contract that we already know. That's not even a projection. That's a number. We know that one. And it wasn't put in there. And so the idea was come back. We'll come back in March. We just don't want anybody looking at us saying, okay, we're surprised. What's happening, you guys? Why aren't you budgeting? Well, we are. We're doing the best we can.
I believe you are. And I think that we should. I sent a letter out recently. I think that you should have every tool that you need to do your job. And not only the judges, but all departments. And I took a little bit of heat for that, but that's how I've been where you're at. But this is not a want or a need in your office. This is mandatory by law that we meet this, and we have to do it.
Oh, we got to fix it.
If it was mandatory by law, I don't know how we missed this in August, and I apologize.
It's mandatory for indigent defense.
Well, and
we have to.
Again,
hey,
Commissioner,
we were making assumptions up here. But this, we're
but,
trying
but,
to get to a
it's,
bottom
it's not,
number.
It's hard to predict a finite number.
And we're not up here to lay criticism on you guys. That
no.
The issue that got us up here was the criticism that was made of us of not budgeting properly, not being responsible, the bad reflection, and all of that. When we did actually have our OCA director here, and I think it was a lack of good information, maybe. I don't know that our budget officer was on board. I watched the video from the August situation, and I can tell you that what was going on was primarily with one particular commissioner and our budget officer about having to come back in March. We just don't want you to be surprised. We're going to be back in March, and I can tell you $420,000 will be under budgeted already.
Okay. Amanda, what do we need to do today to fix this?
Okay, so we have to...
Amanda?
Yes, sir.
Hold on, if I may, Commissioner, because that it will be in the next item there. I just want to say something. I'm not sure about the criticism or whatever was going on there. We're still dealing with the 2019 budget going into the 20 budget. 20 budget is going to be an issue, but we're still dealing with the 19 budget. But from... As I have come into this and observed everybody operating together, the Commissioner's Court, as you know, has got responsibilities, fiscal responsibilities, budget responsibilities, and recognizes that there is a separation of powers here, and we have the utmost respect for you guys. I think I can speak for everybody who's here. I know I do, and so... I understand the need to come in and defend, but I'm this person who was involved, who was obviously handling it. Amanda was not involved in it, and at this point, we love you guys. Let's move on, and for lack of better terms, and I think that Commissioner Metter is moving towards what do we need to do with this, which is an item B. And Amanda, you were forgive me for interrupting you, but I just felt like I needed to say that we're not the enemy here. And I want you to feel that way, and we support you in anything that we can do. We can't do this without you all. But you know, you can't do it without us either, by statute. So we're in this together.
So, Commissioner, you have the next item is to fix the FY19 issue, because they still need money in FY19 to pay the manual claims that Rakesh has on item C.
And how much is that?
So item B, consider and accept approved budget transfers, adjustments, and an amendment for court operations in FY2019. That is basically giving the court operations an additional $394,000, recognizing revenue from investment earnings and some jury and court fines. There's another $70,000 that's being taken from other lines that have previously been restricted for a department that we're trying to ask you guys to unrestrict so that we can use. So the total overage for 2019 that we're looking at is close to $528,000. And so that's what we're asking you guys to fund. There was the backup on the agenda item is to approve those two budget amendments so that we can make those changes and they can make the payment of accounts for this court and the next future courts.
What is our contingency balance currently?
Right. So my amendment doesn't include taking anything from contingency.
Okay. You're going to fund it out of the.
Right. We are recognizing revenue on this one.
I move.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. And then now, do they have enough money to meet their obligations for 6 months that we gave them during budget?
Yes.
Okay.
That was my question.
So.
Absolutely.
In March, let's look at it again, see where we are, and we won't have this problem again.
How are we going to keep this from happening again? Amanda?
Fund enough for them to pay the law?
Well, so, I mean, we got to have somebody communicating with somebody.
We do have a recommendation that we restrict. We know what those fees are going to be on the felony. And so we've talked to the auditor about setting up a restricted line. That way it's not all coming out of the same pool of money for indigent defense. One, it's good because we know that those are set cost. So we can at least meet the obligations that the county agrees to and pay those attorneys timely. So for next year, that'll solve at least that problem.
But we still are going to have, it's still a contingency item to figure out what indigent defense is going to be. But the only way we can even make an educated guess is listening to these people that deal with it every day.
Yes.
And they know, they see it. They see the growth. And they know they've got a pretty good idea of what it's going to be, and we need to listen.
Man, but I think that in your comments with Commissioner Metter a few moments ago, you're prepared to stay in contact with these guys and work through this. And
yes.
And
they've got somebody they can talk to on a regular basis.
That's right.
It's got to be you.
Exactly right. All right.
As far as I can see, unless y'all got another idea.
So I'd ask you to let us as a board work over the next couple months and come up with some suggestions that we might have.
Good.
I'm thinking that one possibility be that we had a committee. We had Nate working with the budget office this past budget session in the summer. Regardless of what we proposed, that wasn't what was pitched to you. So we need to come up with a solution that perhaps we can come up here and pitch our budget. Maybe someone else has a different one, but at least you hear from us and can have more information before you make a decision.
Well, I think we could do it. I think the way Judge McDonald did it 6 or 8 years ago, I mean here's all you guys. I mean, I know y'all are busy, and we're taking a lot of your time. I think if we had one representative and obviously, Nate was it, to come to the court after working with Amanda, obviously, and give us that information. I don't think it's necessary for you guys all to come again.
I mean, I know
you're busy.
I didn't mean the group of us, but
yeah.
That we, as a in our meetings, come up with a way to address what you're concerned. Yeah.
And we need to do that.
Yes.
I agree.
We appreciate you all coming. Concerning the last item, Rakesh.
Yes, sir. We still have item C, the budget amendment and the transfer that we just got approved
from the budget office. We need...
Can't hear you. Say that again. It's not coming through on the mic.
So item C is consider and approve payment of manual checks in the amount of $374,000.
Microphone's not working, Rakesh.
The budget amendment that just got approved as an item B is sufficient to cover these expenses.
Yeah.
So we need your approval to pay these manual checks.
Manual checks. Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to start running those checks today and try to get them out as soon as we can.
I move.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Judges, thank you all
thank
very
you,
much
Judge.
For coming.
Thank
we
you,
Judge.
Appreciate y'all's time.
All right. Appreciate it.
Ah, terrible. Tragic. They went to school together. We raised them up.
Budget. Amanda.
Good morning. Judge, Commissioners, I ask you to consider, accept, and approve the salary schedule for FY 2020, effective October 5th, 2019. This salary schedule is published online. It's on our website. It's on the auditor's website and also under today's agenda, under payment of accounts, right underneath on the main page, it's on there as well. We are asking that you, this schedule reflects the changes that we anticipate using for the new upload in the new finance system. We will start uploading payroll data in the new system in fiscal year 2020. So the salary schedule reflects some of those changes. So if you see some weird rounding issues or you see some hourly rates that you've not seen before, those are because we're getting ready for the new finance system. So I ask that you take that into consideration whenever you're approving the schedule today.
All right.
I do need a motion on that.
All right, have a motion to approve.
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Discussion? Motion carries.
The other item I have, Judge Commissioners, is to consider and approve the budget policies for FY 2020. The budget policy has gone through review of the County Attorney's Office and the County Auditor's Office. The version that I provided you today was after the comments from the County Attorney's Office. I just want to go through some of the big items really quick that we did make the changes on. In Section 1, budget control, there were no changes. This is basically stating that, you know, what the Commissioner's Court's assignment is with the budget, what my job is with the budget, and then what the department head's duties are as well. Section 2, the budget office in coordination with the County Auditor's Office. This, again, is recognizing that anything that's over $5,000 is considered a capital outlay item. That any fees that are generated through departments should be any changes to those fees need to go through the County Auditor's Office for review and consultation with the County Attorney's Office on potential statutes. Departments requesting CIP items realize that even if they're a multi-year project, we fund them 1 year at a time, and then normally we adopt the schedule. The CIP schedule is a five-year hold. The court also in that item that we have a fund balance policy that we try to target at least 10 to 15% of the annual operating level in our general fund. Budget modifications, not a lot of major changes in these areas, but one of those major changes is that we are restricting a few more lines in the budget this year that departments can't really move around. We're also asking again for adult probation to have a budget exception to the policy since they run on a different fiscal year. It's sometimes a little bit difficult for those to hit our budget at the same time. On the budget amendments, we are asking that if a budget amendment is related to a contract, that you guys go ahead and let us post those into the system because you did approve the contract already, and then we'll bring back any changes, ratify those amendments at future court dates. In Section 4, position control and salary changes, basically, the biggest one on this one is the vacancy savings for law enforcement, not giving those law enforcement departments the ability to use their vacancy savings except for the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office in the adopted budget, the sheriff's office has the ability to use their vacancy funds to fund other position needs. The sheriff's office did provide the budget office with the list of positions that they're wanting to open. We've reviewed that and we've made those recommendations and you adopted those in the salary schedule earlier today. Another part of that section that's important is that if the employee vacates a position where a salary supplement is part of the overall salary, the budget office will coordinate with HR to see if that we need to do a market analysis to see what where we should be at in that particular position, since some of the times the car allowance is to offset part of the increased pay. The biggest one is new position requests, changes to salaries, or reorganizations during the fiscal year must be submitted to the budget office. The budget office will review it with HR, and then if it should be put on the commissioner's court, we'll okay it to go on commissioner's court. Otherwise, it needs to wait to the mid-year update. So just a little bit more of the communication with Dodie and I before it just hits the agenda and we get surprised. Carryover procedures. If a department has outstanding items that they weren't able to purchase in 1 year, we're asking if those departments want to specifically ask for those carryover monies, that those come from October 15th. It's not a guarantee that those will be carried over. We'll do the analysis to make sure that those fit the carryover guidelines that we have, and then put them on the second commissioner's court in October. And then Section 6, which is a new one, is budgetary gaps and shortfalls. Basically, if your department realizes or thinks that they may have a budgetary gap or shortfall in their department, that they give proper notice to us so that we can communicate that with you guys to see if we may need to, you know, get some additional money to those departments to fulfill contract requirements. So that's kind of the budget policies in a really short format. I do need you guys to vote these in because we do enforce, the auditor and our office do enforce these policies.
Is there a second? Okay, discussion. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
On the September, on the original, the 326-19, number 13, it says a fund balance of at least 10 to 15% of annual operating cost is the target level for all funds adopted annual budgets. In the 918 budget policy, it says instead of a fund balance, it says a unassigned fund balance in the general fund of at least 10 to 15% of annual operating costs in the target level. I'll let the record reflect that Commissioner Nowak is with us, if you would please. Also, so it says my question is this, which I don't have a problem with that, is that we have the assigned. Now are we adding an additional 10 to 15% on top of that?
No, it's not, Judge. That was my comment, and we had to make some changes to the budget policy based on our comment, because that was the adopted fund balance policy that we adopted back in 2017, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what we're trying to say is, you know, all the special revenue funds and all the grants, those are just a wash. But then as far as the true general fund expenditures, we try to keep our unassigned fund, meaning to say we haven't committed or even restricted those funds to any at all. At least about 10 to 15% of the unassigned fund balance should be saved up for any potential unforeseen activities and events and all that stuff. But as of fiscal 2018, CAFR, we were hitting about 19% unassigned fund balance sitting in the general fund, which I think we are pretty good. So the reason why she had to make the changes is because we wanted to make sure that the budget policy documentation reflects what we adopted as far as the fund balance policy that gets reflected in CAFR. So we're just trying to make sure that the wordings match up.
I got you. Okay. That's the only question I have. I've gone over this. The analysis what you've given both previously and now. We have a motion on the floor to move forward on this. You know, we had in a second. We had discussion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Commissioner Nowak, are you participating in that? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. The county auditor. Consider and approve the payment of accounts.
Good morning. Item 13A, consider and approve payment of accounts.
So I have a motion to accept. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Rakesh. All right. Commissioners, Precinct 3.
Take all appropriate action to approve an on-call engineering services contract with RPS Infrastructure for Commissioner 3. Move.
Second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Purchasing, Gilbert.
Good
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our first item is to consider and approve granting a discretionary exemption for data conversion and monitoring services with Motorola. Actually, it's Spillman. Spillman is a Motorola company. It's for a sheriff's office. It's $243,744. Again, it's for data conversion, and it's being funded by IT.
Do we have a motion to
Move.
Approve? Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
The next item is a change order to the Binkley Barfield contract. This is for utility coordination services for Commissioner Precinct 1. The total is $294,611.
I have a motion to approve. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Take and then C.
Yes, sir. We want to award the audiovisual contract to VIS Houston. This is to put AV equipment in three different courtrooms, JP2, CCL3, and the 221st District Court. Total is $189,461.
Have a motion to approve.
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. D.
Yes, sir. The final is approve the external audit services with Weaver Tiddell. This is for the auditor's office, not to exceed $60,000.
Did that go up, Gilbert, or is that the same as last year?
$5,000.
$5,000.
Move.
And we have that change in the FY 2020 budget, the increase.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Treasurer, Melanie.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners.
Morning.
Michael Howard with Risk Management is also joining me for this item because it is a joint item between the County Treasurer and Risk Management. So we are asking you to consider and accept the proposed payroll deduction and pay methods proposed for January 1st. We outlined them all in the memo to you, and we're here to answer any questions.
What are the change? The pay methods? What's the change?
Direct deposit, pay card, or a check mailed to the employee's designated address. So we're trying to get away from the departments having to come to our office to collect the live checks. We're trying to get more people onto direct deposit, mainly because of the new system as we head into that. And so we're thinking effective January 1, making all these changes, especially with the payroll deduction changes at the same time.
Why is that a problem, me coming over and getting my check? Because I don't like direct deposit. Because I remember when we had a problem before, I was having to loan money to people because they didn't get their check till the next week. And I got mine in my hand. And I'm old school, and I'm not making any apologies for it. I still want my check. So
yeah, wait and change that after I retire.
Thank you, Commissioner, for
I like
support.
A check. Okay, so
there's 100.
Is it going to do away with, I mean,
is this costing us a lot of money?
It's costing a lot of time.
I don't want to be a burden here.
Is what it's costing. And then it's costing us a lot of time in my office and also on the other department's part to come and pick up those checks. And so we're taking the process and trying to make it more efficient. The state of Texas mandates that everybody, you know, receives their pay via direct deposit. The federal government does. You can't go on Social Security without collecting it as direct deposit. And so the most efficient method to pay your staff is through direct deposit. And in doing the new system, we're able to pre-note ahead of time so that there are no live checks even for that first check, so that they are getting their very first check with the county as a direct deposit check.
Part of the process is that you would get the direct deposit, but you would still get the backup.
You still get the pay stub, yeah. And especially with the new system, you'll get that pay stub electronically.
So are you going to make this mandatory? Or
I'm asking y'all to approve these three options, that it's direct deposit, a pay card, which is a debit card with their pay loaded on it that they have in their possession that they can use anywhere that is a Visa or
that's
anywhere.
That's the prepaid medical?
Prepaid debit card for their pay. Or the check mailed to their house so that we're not requiring the departments to come to the office anymore.
Wait a minute.
I don't have a lot of faith in the mail either.
You lost me.
The prepaid debit card, so it is a card that would be in the employee's possession, and when we do the direct deposit upload, to their bank accounts, it loads that card with their pay.
Yeah. And they and
what if
even
don't want that.
Direct deposit. That's what I'm asking y'all to approve.
I write checks. I don't use a debit. I don't have a debit card.
So with direct deposit, it goes straight into your checking account so that you can then write those checks.
So you're not saying it's going to be mandatory to use a debit card?
No, sir. No, sir.
We're
giving
just
these
options,
three right? options. Direct deposit and then the pay card if they don't have a bank account, don't want a bank account for whatever reason, or a live check.
Okay.
Yeah. But the live check would then be mailed to their house instead of the department's coming.
You know, we operate at the state level. Everything came through. It was sent to us. It was given. It came to our checking account. We still got, and still, you know, right up until the very end, you get a check, just like what we have that you drop off at our office. You still get that.
The stuff, yes,
right.
sir.
And it's a...
it's green. I've seen a bunch of them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they continue to be, probably. It's the right color, too, isn't it?
We can't go to the bank cash.
When are you wanting to make this mandatory?
January 1.
One other element to this is will you receive your funds quicker, earlier?
Yes. Majority of the banks with direct deposit, you receive your funds at midnight. It's sitting in your account ready to go.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, do we have a motion?
I still want my check. Sorry. Sorry, Commissioner. I won't. I know I can go get me some money with that.
I've had direct deposit since about 1990. I've never had a problem with it.
Same here.
But that's,
same.
That's me.
Does your whole department do?
I can't say all of them do, but I bet 99% of them do.
We have less than 200 employees that do not take direct deposit. Of that, 29 are visiting judges, and 99 of those are in the elections department, which majority of those are seasonal elections workers. And one of the things that I want to look at is making sure that they all are getting the direct deposit form. I think a lot of times with our seasonal employees, we don't necessarily do that. I don't know if Susie is. But the majority, I mean, we're looking at about 65 people that are actually full-time or part-time constant employees that do not get direct deposit today.
But they pick their check up?
Their department picks their check up.
That's what I mean. So you don't have to mail them?
Not at this point in time.
They pick them up?
No, but then we're taking staff away. Right now, my staff has to come in on payroll Friday at 6:45 in the morning so that staff can come in before the day starts to get those live checks.
The fact of the matter is that...
It looks to me like the mailing it would take more time than just having it available for the departments to pick up.
It will take more time for them to get their check. You're correct,
No,
sir.
No. I mean, it'll take more time for your people.
Honestly, sir, no. We have a postage machine in the office. We run it through, and we do daily mail runs.
The processes of on... If I may.
Go ahead.
The processes of moving forward in the technological aspects of our county is we have to do. We have to move forward.
I mean, the new system is demanding a lot of this.
That's right, and we have much of the state which is already doing it, and other counties, I'm confident, are at some level doing it. And you know, I've been doing online banking, all kinds of things online. It's a little bit tough to get used to. It depends on what you're used to, but you do it. And this is where our whole society and culture are at. That doesn't mean that that's a reason why we have to do it. Montgomery County first, and we do what Montgomery County does and feels like is best. But at the same time,
sir.
You know, I would be in favor of this. Is there any more discussion that we want to have?
We come over here all the time to pick up stuff other than checks on Friday. Yeah. But I'll do whatever y'all want to do. I like picking up my check, and there are other people in my apartment.
I think
apartment
we're going to be outvoted anyway. We're going to lose this deal. We're going to have to get a damn mail-in check.
Well, so we can move on, Matt?
I move that we accept it as it is.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No. I'm against it.
All right. Ayes have it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Lord.
Emergency management.
I stayed too long.
Judge, if I can, before Darren comes up, I want to be sure and thank Darren for all he was doing during our last week. Even though he wasn't in town, he was sure constant on the phone.
Sure was.
He answered the phone and called us back.
Absolutely.
Yep, Miranda and Mark, they all did a super job. And
Darren, thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate you and your staff.
The entire department.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All my staff, thank you.
Y'all did a great job. We appreciate your support.
The support this court shows us, we appreciate it. This morning on the agenda, we have considered, discussed, and take any and all appropriate action regarding Tropical Storm Imelda and related flooding events, disaster declarations in effect in Montgomery County. I know the clock on the day is ticking, and I'll try not to take up too much of your time, but just on that day, on the 19th, actually beginning September 17th, when Imelda began to make landfall, our county started receiving rain. When it was over with on the 19th, in less than 24 hours, we'd received more rain than we saw in 4 days of Harvey. 32 inches were recorded in Montgomery County, mainly on the east side, as you all know. Mm-hmm. The morning of the 19th started a little before midnight, actually, on the 18th, but we watched the system develop over in the northeast corner of the county and then progressively move across and then down. We went from a level 3 activation to level 1 activation in a matter of hours, brought in numerous support agencies and staff to assist. Probably the largest evacuation was the evacuation of Pine Shadows Nursing Home of 177 patients out of that facility. They all told our first responders countywide made over 650 water rescues, estimating 4,000 people were pulled out of their emergent situations. We ran 3 shelters with over 180 people and 25 animals, and we had assistance from all over the region as well as the state, including several task force units. As the waters began to recede, we saw the damages. We're now estimating 1,500-plus homes will be affected, over 100,000 cubic yards of debris that are going to need to be collected. This morning, you have 3 resolutions before you, 2 of which I think you've already seen. The third one I'm going to present to you. The first one is we're requesting the order extending the declaration of local disaster for Montgomery County on the 19th. Judge Kehoe enacted our disaster declaration, and that was good for 7 days. We're bringing it to you today, asking you for another 30 days.
How many days?
30. And while the emergency response side of Imelda is over with, we're still very much in the recovery. Still a lot of activities going on in coordination with the state, requesting state assets. And so this disaster declaration will help ensure that those processes remain in place.
Right. We have a motion to approve the extension of the declaration.
Move.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Yep.
The second resolution in order is titled Tropical Storm Imelda. I won't read it to you, but they're basically we're making note that we did close all county facilities on September the 19th, inclusive to certain personnel and authorization for the use of code 032 on timesheets for those employees not reporting to work on that day, and regular and overtime hours worked by all employees reporting to work during the period from September 19th through September 26th, 2019, in accordance with the Employee Policy Manual, Section 4.14, Disaster Policy, and designating fund balance as a funding source for any county match if necessary in expenditures deemed ineligible by FEMA related to Tropical Storm Imelda, and the authorization of the utilization of employees to perform county functions at the direction of the authorized party, including the county judge, or the Homeland Security Office and Emergency Management Director, which may include duties outside of their normal capacity and department, and authorization from the county judge or HSOEM director to incur expenses related to Tropical Storm Imelda, relief and recovery efforts in an amount not to exceed $150,000, naming contingency as the source.
What's our contingency balance right now?
This morning when I checked, it was $934,000.
Move. Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
The third resolution we brought before you this morning, and this is the first part of the recovery efforts. This is the notice to proceed resolution. I am going to caution you that the amounts are going to be sticker shock on you, but these are not to exceed amounts. We're not asking for full funding up to this level. We're just saying we anticipate it could go as high as this amount. If you're uncomfortable with the amounts I'm going to present to you, we can definitely take a look at reducing you, but we do need to enact these three items today, if at all possible. The first one, is the notice to proceed with Crowder Golf for the mobilization of equipment, personnel, and supplies to assist with debris removal as a result of Tropical Storm Imelda, with an initial estimated cost not to exceed the amount of $1,250,000, with funding to be from, I need for you to name a source.
Is that pretty much for Precinct 4?
By and large, that's where the majority of it is. We do have damages in Precinct 1, Precinct 3, and Precinct 2. But by and large, the majority of the damaged property is in Precinct 4. That's correct.
Yeah, that's a big number.
Precinct 1, we saw...
Is Crowder Gulf the one that did our last one?
They are currently on contract. Yes, sir.
We had some problems there.
For sure.
It was the initial onset of the activation. If you remember, we had a lot of things working against us during Harvey. A, it was unprecedented. B, it was statewide. It wasn't just region-wide. And then we had a hurricane land in Florida not long after that. So the combination of all of those items, we did struggle a little bit on the onset with Crowder Gulf.
Was it Crowder Gulf or was it the other...
Tetra Tech.
I think we had more problems with them than we did Crowder Gulf.
Right. Crowder did stumble out of the gate. But we have worked with them since that time. We've renewed our contract with them based on what they have shown us and what they have told us that they can do. We had a meeting with them yesterday. We've talked about what we expect. They have agreed to that, and they're ready to roll within 7 days of approval today.
I think they did a fairly decent job after we got all the issues worked out with the other guys.
Yes, sir. Precinct 1, 75 properties. Precinct 2, 14 properties. Precinct 3, 8 properties. Precinct 4, currently 1,104.
I move.
Second.
What's the source of funding for this? It's obviously not going to be contingency.
Right.
I think it has to be fund balance.
The second item, number two, is the...
Wait, hang on. There's still discussion.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not so fast.
So, well, that's all place we got. Yeah. But I will amend my motion, either that or Precinct 4's budget.
Thank God. That sounds good. I second that.
I'm like contingency. I don't have it either.
Fund balance will be the funding source.
Yeah.
I amend my motion.
Second. Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
And motion. If this is, if there's a federal declaration approved, then we can go back to them and receive those monies just like we have in
that's
the past.
More than likely, it's 75-25. That's correct.
And how soon do we get our money?
Oh, gosh.
Just a question. But we have a motion on the floor. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Motion carries. Thank you. Ike last year.
I'm sorry, sir.
We closed Ike last year, right?
About a year before, 2016, yeah. We closed Ike.
That's
Ike.
How long.
Yeah.
So
it
takes time.
We're still waiting on tax day stuff.
That's right.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay, continue.
Item number two on this resolution is notice to proceed with Haggerty Consulting for mobilization of personnel to assist county staff with debris monitoring, damaged site data collection, and reimbursement assistance as a result of Tropical Storm Imelda, with an initial estimated cost not to exceed $750,000. Also, name a funding source. This is the contract consultant that replaced Tetra,
yeah.
Which is the one that we had. We do not anticipate it going anywhere near those numbers.
Does your staff control that, Darren?
We work
what
with
they
the
do
cost.
And how they do
the
it.
Yes, we do, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, it also helps if you do it out there in your own precinct, too.
Yes.
You got to be with them.
Yes, that's correct.
I move.
Second.
If this is not a federally approved disaster, then we won't need to do that. Because measuring that, the quantities, I mean, the only thing we'd be doing is second guess.
All we'd be doing is validate what Crowder's charging us.
Yeah, and so I don't think it'd be worth the funding.
Right, but if we are declared, we have to have it. And if we've already started collecting debris, we're going to have to somehow
validate all
that.
This is not an actual contract. We're just setting us that. We're just identifying a funding source if we need them.
Well, we're engaging the contract with them at an amount not to exceed that level.
Well, I agree with you.
Yeah, we don't need to do that.
We can reduce that level.
Crowder.
Yeah, we can reduce that amount if you want, just to get them on the ground to start certifying Crowder's trucks. And in preparation
of. Is that part of the FEMA reimbursement? Do we have to have these guys?
Yes, sir, we do have to have them.
Commissioner,
we got to have.
Commissioner Riley, go ahead. What were you going to say?
What's the chances of this not, and I know you can't answer this, but what do you, what's the chance of this not being a federal?
It's like asking me to predict the weather. It's a 50-50 shot. Right now, the county has met its requirement.
Okay.
We have a deductible is the wrong word, but we have a number we have to meet. We've hit that. We've tripled that number.
Are all the other counties that were declared a disaster have to meet the same numbers, or numbers different? For
their numbers are different. So, for example, Harris County is $15 million. I don't know what the city of Houston's is, but it would be close to $15 million. Ours is 1.7.
Have you talked to those guys?
Harris County has not hit their number. However, Liberty, Hardin, Matagorda, all those counties to our east, Jefferson, they're going to hit their number.
Have they been declared yet?
They have not been declared yet. Everybody's in a holding phase. We begin this disaster, like 2016, we do preliminary damage assessments with teams from the state and from FEMA. We've started those. Actually, they're out driving right now for individual assistance. We will do that for our PA assistance on Friday. We actually take them out, show them the damage, and they take that into account when they make their determination whether or not they're going to activate.
Plus, the governor, in his acceptance of our disaster declaration, operates under certain assumptions of what's going to take place. I've talked with Senator Crichton about this. We've been in contact with John Cornyn. John Cornyn contacted us. Ted Cruz's office, with the president being in town, Brandon mentioned our county. I talked to him yesterday about this, about 11 o'clock. Cecil Bell's in the loop on this. We chatted about this as they were there with the president. There is not a guarantee, but overall, it appears that we're moving in that direction. And, you know, we have to deal with this in the event that we either do or we don't. We got to deal with it either way.
Right.
So it's a up to 700.
If you feel more comfortable reducing that number, I would support that. If you want to enact the contract if you want to put it on a shorter term, say we go ahead and enact the contract and we run it for 14 days, and if the next court would come back, it looks like we're not going to have a PA, then we can cease and desist. Then I believe that's all.
Can we do it that
way? Quite legal, Gilbert.
Well,
yeah, we can put terms on it.
That's what you suggest we do? Well, then.
It says not to exceed, so there's no declaration.
There's no need.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let's do it that way. We would definitely know by next court if we have a declaration. Should.
Let's do it that way.
So we have a motion.
So we just need to amend the motion. Who made
it
first?
I think I did.
Okay.
You got to amend it again, Matter.
Amend it to
I forgot what the original one was.
We need a funding source as well.
Huh?
We need a funding source as well.
Yeah. So we're talking about the backup team. What's it called? Tekra?
This is Haggerty Consulting. Haggerty Consulting.
Haggerty? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Move on Haggerty funding source. Be fund balance.
For 14 days.
For 14 correct. Days, yeah.
To the next court.
To the next court, right.
Okay. Second.
Any more discussion?
You want to leave the amount at the 750? You want to reduce that amount?
I think we leave that like it is.
Well, I mean, it's not.
What do we reduce it to? How do we,
we're
Gilbert?
Not obligated to that, are we, Gilbert? I mean, it's just a number.
In 14 days from now, we just say we're not going to do it. We're done.
It's just a number.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Gilbert, you've been involved in this, right? In terms of the numbers that we're agreeing to. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there is no declaration. You stop monitoring. I mean, it's an hourly rate that they charge us anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Basically is what it is.
So.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, gentlemen. The final item is the notice to proceed again with Haggerty Consulting with the safety assessments and data collection to be conducted in the damaged portions of Montgomery County. Response produced as a result of those assessments will further future planning efforts to ensure the safety and well-being of our residents and responders. As a result of Tropical Storm Imelda, with an initial estimated cost not to exceed $1,200,000. Please
send
the funding.
What's that for? Tell me again.
This is for our safety inspections that are conducted post-disaster that allow us to go in and see what the true
levels of water were and what the true damages to structures are. And that
is this
ties
for buyout purposes?
That ties into our floodplain management. A lot of it ties into our floodplain management and what's required for that program, the operation of that program.
But it's for buyout?
Buyouts would receive benefit from the data collected during this. That's correct.
Darren, how on this one, is it an hourly rate? Is it per building?
Yes. Yeah, it's hourly.
On average, just to give the court an idea, because I think the 1.2 is really high, right? And so I don't think you're getting a realistic idea. But on average, like you said, there were, what, about 1,200 homes?
1,500 is what we based the initial contract price off of. Again, this is for 90 days. We don't anticipate it going 90 days. I talked to the contractor this morning. He thinks he can complete the work in 4 weeks. So that's a significant difference from 90 days, 4 weeks to 90 days. So we don't anticipate this contract initial price is just what it is. It's just an initial swinging for the fence ballpark price. We can reduce that. We can hold them on the number of hours. If you want to delay the start of this for 2 weeks, we can do that. We're just trying to get our...
If the guy's telling us 4 weeks and here we're projecting 90 days, it's $1.2 million. When he's telling us four, somewhere in between 4 weeks and 90 days.
I think we do this like we did the last one. Let's wait 14 days, and if we do get declared, then we enact this and move on.
Okay, so we're going to hold on number three.
All right. Good call. All right, do we have a
motion? Do we need a motion to that effect, or just come back and forth?
If you're not doing any action on it today, I would just not, right? I mean,
it's on the resolution. Right. Do we need to make note?
So the resolution that Darren brought to court today, and trying to anticipate what you may do, has all of the last three things that you've done, and we've modified that. So we have now 14 days, but that's not really memorialized on the resolution that's going to be before you. So what I think we should do is probably go ahead and do you want them to direct you to go ahead and enact these and vote on that, on those three things, and then we'll memorialize it.
And then we'll memorialize it our next board in 14 days.
At the next board action.
Resolution.
Right.
Yes.
And then we'll work through it as it comes.
Exactly.
That sounds like it. I mean, we've got to do this.
We need to get started, but we just weren't sure which way we were going with
it. So where does the 14 days, it's not going to show up on any of these resolutions?
I'm going to fix it before.
Yeah, we'll fix it.
We're going to, yes. I'm going to take what you did and directed it. I'm going to fix the resolution before you authorize it.
Okay.
So we All need right. to move on this
Yes,
time.
We do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Thank you very
Commissioner
much.
Commissioner Judge, any other questions?
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you, guys.
All right, grants. Becca.
Good morning, Judge, Commissioners. Please consider and approve the fiscal year 2020 life-saving impact grant application to Petco Foundation in the amount of $150,000 for the animal shelter. No matches required. Please authorize Mark Wysocki to submit grant electronically on behalf of Montgomery County.
Do I have a motion to approve?
Move. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to temporarily recess the Commissioner's Court to convene public hearings. Move forward, public hearing, Precinct 1. Is there anybody here to, I'm sorry, excuse
me. Do you want me to go ahead and read it?
Yeah.
Consider the partial revision of 2, 3, lots 2, 3, and 4, Block 1, Point Aquarius, Section 1, to be known as Point Aquarius, Section 1, Partial Replat Number 1. This is a 0.155-acre tract. We've received a letter of no objection from the POA. The purpose of this proposed partial replat is to combine three lots into one. Is anybody here to discuss that?
Don't believe it is, Judge.
We're not ready to take any action.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's go ahead and reconvene our court. Are there any statements from our citizens that they have not made that they would like to make at this time? Yes, ma'am. If you'd tell us your name and your purpose, come forward to the microphone. Please. Thank you for coming here today.
My name is Bobby Bates, and my concerns are just over the events with Imelda. My house, I've been in this house for 11 years now. We've never even come close to worrying about flooding. This time, I've lost my home, my vehicles, and both of the equipment for both of my businesses. how are we going to move forward and what help is going to be available for us. We were not in a floodplain. And again, and we've looked at the history of the property, and the property has never in the history flooded before. So what changes have gone on that have caused my property to flood, and what can we do in the future? That was all of my comment.
Bobby, thank you. Let me just say that we are considering and are moving forward on all options available. All right. Also, you have the opportunity to talk to your commissioner as well, who will help with that as well. But we appreciate you coming in. Our heart breaks for you. Thank you for coming, Sharon. All right. Are there any other items? All right. Any miscellaneous?
Move we adjourn.
Second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.